My very special guest is Ellen Brown, which is an author. Webofdebt.com is one of her websites. Something tells me you've got like umpteen others. Would you care to, give yourself a shameless plug?
Okay. Well, my latest book is called The Public Bank Solution, which is, so Web of Debt was the problem, which is the banking system. The solution is a better banking system, which would be one that's publicly owned, that returns the profits to the public, returns the interest, that has control of where credit is directed, so credit can go where in the sectors of the economy where it's needed. So that website is publicbanksolution.com. And then my blog is at ellenbrown.com, and it's got over 200 articles on it, on this subject. And I guess that's enough. Web of Debt. Yeah.
All right. Fair enough.
I also have a publishing company.
The public banking system has been opposed by many sides, and usually by people with no information who just choose to demonize people who promote this kind of banking system, which historically does actually work and work very well, and as you've said, is sustainable. One of the critiques that I've seen is they call it funny money. And I say, well, if public banking money is funny money, what we've got now is frickin' hilarious.
Well, public banking is not about changing the issue of the money. I mean, we're talking about local public banks. You could have central public banks, of course, that many central banks are technically owned by the government. For example, the Bank of England is owned by the government, but it's still controlled privately. I mean, it caters to the banks. Or the Federal Reserve is the obvious example. It is literally privately owned. There are 12 branches of the Federal Reserve System. All of them are 100% owned. The stock of the branches, they're incorporated. The stock of the branches is 100% owned by the banks in their districts. And they, of course, pull the strings. And the Federal Reserve Act itself is set up to serve the banks. In fact, when Ben Bernanke was doing quantitative easing, after he did the first quantitative easing, and then they were thinking about what to do in the second round of quantitative easing, and it was suggested that why didn't he issue money and lend it very cheaply to state and local governments, because they were the ones that had been devastated by this whole banking crisis, and it wasn't their fault. I mean, they had lost their tax base because of this banking crisis, which was the fault of Wall Street. So why not give them these bankers' rates, you know, these very low interest rates? And Ben Bernanke said, well, it's not in his mandate. That's not in the Federal Reserve Act. He is not allowed to make loans to state and local governments. And it's the same way with the ECB. It is not allowed, according to the Maastricht Treaty, to make loans directly to governments.
So basically, if you're a private central bank, it's illegal to actually help the government that you're supposed to be providing the money for.
Right. And at one time, central banks actually belonged to the governments and they served the governments. And that was a better system. I mean, you could corrupt any system. Well, I just now wrote about Costa Rica, which I don't think I wasn't even aware of it myself until somebody wrote to me who lives in Costa Rica. And he said they have this wonderful banking system. It's 80% publicly owned banks. The people refuse to give up their publicly owned banks, even though the IMF has tried very hard to privatize them. The whole system went, in 1949, there was a big revolution. And before that, they were the poorest, they were the poorest country around. And so they didn't have resources. They didn't really have anything. And they came around to now they were rated as the number one on the happiness index by, I forget who it is who does his ratings, but anyway, quality of life is very high in Costa Rica. And what they did was they turned a number of major industries into publicly owned industries. So they were making money for the people with these industries. These are like infrastructure, the type of industries that should be commonly owned, or should, you know, the profits should go back to the people, and they do. Telecommunications, they refuse to give that up. Social Security, pension funds, those are all in the public sector. And the public sector controls banks and or owns the banks. And so they're very safe for the people. In the rest of Central America, the banks keep failing, and then people lose their money when the banks fail. So that's why the people don't want to give up these public banks, which are very safe. They're protected by the government because they are the government. And they direct credit for 50 years now. They've been directing credit to the sectors that need it. So they've used that credit to build infrastructure, et cetera. And it's worked really well. So the man that wrote to me about that, he keeps telling me more and more about the system. He said that when people ask him, well, why do you think this worked so much better in Costa Rica than it did in Eastern Europe? Well, for one thing, he thinks it probably did work better in Eastern Europe than we've been led to believe or we're allowed to know. But that he thought that the difference was that in Costa Rica, it's a very democratic, transparent, accountable system. I mean, if you have a corrupt government, of course, you can corrupt anything, including your banks. But if you have an accountable system where everybody can see what's going on, and we've now come to that stage where, because of the internet, it's quite possible that you could put your whole banking system on the internet and people could see, like the Bank of North Dakota, which is publicly owned, they could see exactly what's going on, what kind of loans are being made, who they're being made to. So it would be fully accountable, fully transparent in a democratic system. Then it works really well.
It would allow a lot of public watchdogs the information they need in order to indeed force accountability by exposing any type of corruption that they might find. I remember I talked to the late Bob Chapman a number of years ago, and I asked him, is it possible to get rid of corruption, like entirely, forever? He says, no, it's not possible to get rid of corruption. It is possible to get it back, but it's a perennial problem. It's like grass. You have to keep mowing it down.
Yeah, but I just wonder, I mean, it seems to me that we are sort of, the internet has changed so many things. For example, the media can't control us anymore because we have our own media, so we can find out what's going on. And then this whole spying thing, I mean, it is creepy that they can know everything about you, but just imagine it, that we could actually turn that for good, it seems to me, possibly, in the sense that if you know that there's nowhere to hide, then you'll do the right thing, because why not? You might
what
as well.
What have you got to lose?
Yeah. It's just way too tempting to cheat when it's easy to cheat. But if it's not easy to cheat, then you'll play by the rules. Why not?
Yeah, I think so, because that's how corruption works, I think. People would do corrupt things if they can't get away with them.
And it's like cockroaches. You get rid of all the places to hide and you won't have cockroaches.